Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Hello there, you're welcome along. So, busy show this evening, as you can imagine. Republic of Ireland in action in our house over in Denmark. Nathan Murphy and Dan McDonnell along shortly with team news and some thoughts from the stadium. Ireland 16, New Zealand 9. Rather amazing performance over the weekend from Ireland. We'll have Brian O'Driscoll, we'll have Eddie O'Sullivan after 8 o'clock. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent is here in studio now. And after 9, Pat Nevin on the football show and Gary Breen will join us as well at full time in the Denmark game. Rory, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Joe.
Hello, Richie.
Hi, Joe.
53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. I feel we should obviously talk about New Zealand. It's the big story of the weekend, the Irish win there. But let's just give people the Irish team news first, Richie, given that it's about to kick off and team news not long in.
Five changes from the side that drew nil all with Northern Ireland. So thrillingly last weekend. Stan Randolph continues in goal. A back three of Richard Keogh, Shane Duffy and Kevin Long, with Long and Keogh coming into the side there. Seamus Coleman and Enda Stevens of Sheffield United will operate as the wing backs. Cyrus Christie is again being deployed in midfield, looks like alongside Robbie Brady and Jeff Hendrick, with Callum O'Dowda in support of Aidan O'Brien, who replaces Callum Robinson. For Denmark, a couple of players rested for them, but still a very strong side. Frederik Vuno starts in goal in place of Kasper Schmeichel. They've then got a back four of Peter Ankersen, Mathias Jurensen, Andreas Bjelland and Jonas Knudsen. In midfield, Lasse Schüne and Pierre-Emil Højbjerg are joined by Christian Eriksen, while Yusuf Juri and Martin Braithwaite are in support of Nikolai Jurensen, and as they kick off 7:45.
Okay, so Cyrus Christie back in midfield with Robbie Brady and Jeff Hendrick, and then it's O'Dowda and O'Brien as a front two, but I'm sure we'll have O'Dowda dropping more back into the midfield, and then it's wing backs with Coleman and Enda Stevens, Keogh and Duffy and Long making up three central defenders this evening. And I must say, I noticed yesterday, even just reviewing the papers, we weren't going to talk about it much, but there was an added level of bite and pressure on O'Neill, a real this is end game territory if things go badly this evening. Stephen Hunt was certainly saying if it's a big, big defeat, which is a possibility, I suppose, then he'd really fear for O'Neill and the coaching ticket.
Yeah, I'm looking at today's papers, they've doubled down a little bit, and you know, I'm not as on top of it as I would have been in the past, but I covered Ireland during the Trapattoni days and I never thought we'd be looking back at them with such kind of nostalgia. I mean, I think that the selection of Christie in midfield will ultimately be one of these things that we look back and at as the things that just on when everyone is wondering what's going on with this team. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest square peg in a round hole that I can remember for an international team from Ireland, and it's like try and get all your best players on the pitch, but you know you got to pick them in their positions. You know, there's four midfielders there, you wonder how it's been received. It's just so grim, and I guess the Irish rugby team are probably not making life in any way easier with the success that they're having.
It's kind of got echoes of the last days of Owen Hand, for people who are old enough to kind of remember it, whereby they were playing in front of half empty stadia, the results were pretty poor, and there was a general feeling not only of discontent but just of apathy towards the side. And that's probably the worst thing you can have in terms of a national side, is just people not caring whatsoever. Mm. Like, a lot of people just won't bother watching this game this evening. A lot of people will probably check in the result afterwards and kind of shrug their shoulders and go, all right, Grant, that's where we are now. And that's not a good place to be.
It's the mad thing, all right. Meanwhile, over a million people watched on Saturday, which is extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, not surprising remotely, but over a million people watched on Saturday, and 16-9 was the final result. This was just a phenomenal performance by an Irish team. Brian O'Driscoll's on later. We've already put it out in Facebook Live. He certainly was struggling to think of a more complete performance across 80 minutes in the history of Irish rugby, but it's been talked about in that kind of vein.
I don't think it's a massive surprise. Yeah. I did tip New Zealand in the paper, and I didn't think without Conor Murray, you know, I thought they would come up a little bit short, and I was wrong. And that's one of the most surprising things about it.
But that you were wrong.
No. But like, look, they've beaten them before. Three or four of the players have beaten them twice.
Didn't that feel like a touch more of an ambush, a slightly strange occasion, a week in Chicago? Even Joe Schmidt was talking.
It didn't at the time. I think we've kind of come to think that. I think at the time it felt amazing. And I actually prefer Chicago as an event, as an occasion, strangely enough. Yeah. Even though I think for a lot of people, because it was in Dublin, because it was live on the national broadcaster, all these things add up to it being an even bigger occasion. Yeah. Like, Chicago was late at night, but maybe it's because I was at, you know, I'm lucky enough to have been there in Chicago. I'm lucky enough to have been in Wellington last year.
I was in Chicago, yeah. And I would have what happened at the weekend way ahead of Chicago.
They scored 5 tries in Chicago. They played amazing rugby. It was an incredible event, and it was the first time. Saturday was I think Saturday, I've also seen since Chicago. Chicago was probably a bit more of a surprise from an Irish point of view as well, because the form line hadn't been as good.
Yes.
Whereas the form line now is that this is the level that this team is at. I think that the 40 minutes in the first half in Twickenham was the definitive performance of this era. And this was a continuation of that, but they weren't quite as accurate with the ball. And there is scope for improvement, and that's the scary thing, because we're not used to this. But it was incredible. I'm not trying to take away from it.
Yeah.
It was an incredible moment. It will go down as one of the greatest days in Irish rugby, arguably the greatest. And I think to do it there in front of the home fans, the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. Again,
came
another contrast.
Yeah,
no, it absolutely came through on TV.
It was like emanating through the TV that the crowd almost were concentrating to an unbelievable extent. Every box kick, every passage of play, they were reacting to accordingly.
That
they
last
weren't missing a thing.
Bout of the fields from the crowd, like ordinarily you kind of, it's become part of the furniture almost that the crowd will sing Fields of Athenry, but there seemed to be an extra purpose towards singing it, that it was like louder than I'd ever heard it.
Well, like,
and it seemed to be in an effort to kind of get that final 3 minutes over.
And then
the
John Lacey joins in with a 10, 9, 8, a countdown.
Yeah.
If you watch the TV coverage back for no reason, he's just like on the side in this Irish accent counting down to zero as the field rings out and New Zealand are in 2013-esque kind of wave after wave and Ireland are defending. It's just, it's an incredible piece of sporting theatre, and it is a result that will stand the test of time.
Because I saw a tweet, I think it was from Simon Hick, and I think I almost have the words right, which is not great journalism on either part, but it's jumping at me now, where he said, Chicago felt a bit surreal and this more feels believable. And I would take that vein that ambush is too strong a word, but it just had an unusual quality.
There's
that
so many
game.
Alien components in Chicago. Chicago
well, New Zealand were better on paper this weekend. They were
stronger
on paper.
That was the other point I was making. Yeah. So no Retallick and Whitelock. You know, Kano and who was it in the second row?
Patrick Tuitulupo.
Yeah. So that's a different prospect completely, you know, and particularly with the worries about the line-out the week before. You looked at the New Zealand team sheet this week, plus the intensity of the build-up, the sense that this was 1v2, that this was a heavyweight bout, that this was a standalone, admittedly, there's no cup at play or anything at play, really, but there was something almost better for it just being a standalone. We're coming at you and you're coming at us, and it's everyone giving their best, and it's all we're thinking about.
Yeah.
As opposed to Chicago, where even Joe Schmidt sort of admitted in the aftermath of this result that Chicago was a bit of a surprise. They only had two proper days of build up proper training the way he would have liked it, and who knows how well the New Zealand team were preparing. That's always nagged me a little bit about Chicago. Yeah. And I've none of those qualms after what we saw on
Saturday. Certainly Chicago got Ireland got New Zealand's attention in Chicago, and that attention hasn't lifted since. So we saw the fury they came back with the second time 2 weeks later, and then we saw the levels of performance or intensity that they brought to the table this weekend. So I think the 1v2 thing, certainly the fact that Ireland are now European champions, they're there to be got at, and it doesn't seem to bother them, is a really incredible thing for an Irish team. And I remember sitting down with Joe Smith for a one-on-one long time ago in 2014 when he just took over.
When was the last Joe Schmidt one-on-one recent times?
Did one with Gerry Thornley last year.
Did and,
but that was in between that, there was very few. I don't think he's done any. But he just said, I want Ireland, I don't want an underdog's tag. I want Ireland to be comfortable being favourites. I don't get being, you know, the underdog's tag. And it's taken him a while, and he probably got to that stage a little bit with the Paul O'Connell team, but then they went back to scratch when he retired and they lost injuries. And through South Africa winning over there, through Chicago, beating England at the last day of the Six Nations to the Leinster Grand Slam, he's built and he's built and he's built.
Yeah.
And what he's built just looks so strong.
It's a very
right now.
Un-Irish thing to have that level of confidence and that level of surety in your own ability. Like the very foundation of the state is built on a plucky defeat, right? So for an Irish team to go out there and show that they are the best in the world doesn't seem right, but in the best possible way.
What was your favourite moment or standout performance across the 80 minutes?
I think the moment was Josh van der Fleer catching Beauden Barrett as the afterburners just came on. I was actually about to look down and start typing about Beauden Barrett's try, and then I just saw this red scrum cap come out of nowhere and latch onto him. Omani's catch ahead of Ben Smith right up there, although the repeated viewings, it doesn't look as impressive. The speed which he got back was really, really good. His poach, there was like four miracle plays from Ireland in the second half.
Yeah.
Like those three, and then Keith Earls catching Rico Awani in full flight after they attacked the seam at the back of the line out with that overthrow was an excellent tackle as well. But I think we're so used to seeing Beauden Barrett attack a gap like that and go through it, and it looked like Van der Fleer was gone. And I don't know how he got him. Performance, I think James Ryan just edges it. I know Peter Mann, he got man of the match, and it's very hard to argue against that. But Ryan was against, you know, Brodie Retallick didn't play like the best player in the world. But for me, Brodie Retallick is the best rugby player in the world. And Whitelock isn't far off in terms of second rows. And Ryan was phenomenal and put himself, having already outplayed Marwa Toje, who's seen, you know, in England certainly as the coming rival to Retallick. Etzebeth is up there as well, but Ryan is now firmly in that conversation. I thought his from the off, aided very capably by CJ Stander, who was also excellent. I mean, I gave nines to nearly everyone in the pack today in my player ratings.
Yeah.
It was hard to fault anyone, but I thought James Ryan was just that little bit above everyone else, and I think he's changed Ireland in terms of the way we've played in the course of a year. He's 22 years old and he's made that impact. It is incredible.
Mad, all right. How come the reflex of a percentage of Irish sports fans is to dismiss the game as a friendly, bizarre, downbeat Irish mentality, says Darren. I couldn't be arsed even talking about that. enough with the bandwagon rugby backside licking talk about beating New Zealand. It's not a World Cup year. We were at home in front of 50,000 drunks. And no medals or trophies were at stake. Typical Irish hype. We're worse than the English media, says Eddie.
Good man, Eddie.
I mean, that goes back to the point I just made. Why does there need to be a trophy? Why does it need to be part of a competition? It had the intensity of and build up of our best against your best, one versus two.
Friendlies in soccer have became meaningless because the teams treated them as such. Mm. This wasn't treated as a meaningless friendly. So winning it actually does mean something.
New Zealand reserved the type of haka Donald Lennon was saying for very special occasions. Yeah. I mean, everything about it was box office. Eamon Sweeney used the term heavyweight bout. You know, a world championship title fight, all that kind of stuff.
Hey, Joe did, actually.
Did he? Yeah. I mean, if you can't see why it was significant, then you're just deliberately not seeing why it was significant, I would say. Why did we kick away possession again? Nail-biting finale. Thanks, B. We saw this one out. Excellent stuff.
Energy levels. They looked absolutely out in their feet, and I think it was easier to try and make... And New Zealand didn't look too fresh either, so I think the idea was either get the ball back or pin them back in their own kind of 22 and make them attack. And obviously that didn't work out in 2013, all those years ago, but there were signs, like Wayne Barnes was screaming at them, make sure you go into that ruck upright. His communication, I know a lot of people don't like him as a referee, his communication on Saturday, if you had a ref link, was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like he talked them through everything, and it wasn't the bantery stuff that we get from other referees. It was proper instruction. I thought it was really good.
Well, I watched on TV and thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, I thought he was very good. A couple of decisions, but you know, there's always going to be one or two.
Sure.
But yeah, he was saying, get your body height right. Don't do what Jack McGrath did in 2013, where he hit a ruck and just flopped down. And there's a risk of that. A referee will always punish you if you're just trying to keep the ball. So unless you're going to try and push the envelope when you didn't have to, 7 points up, why would you? Mm. Give it to them, make them play, and back your defence, which in fairness has kept them scoreless for 79 minutes.
Yes.
Why not go again?
Extraordinary. The first home nation not to concede a try against New Zealand since 1995.
Yeah, was that France?
Just a bit mad. I don't know who it was, actually.
I think it's European. I think Northern Hemisphere. Yeah, okay. The Lions did it in 20 last year, but in fairness, the conditions in Wellington that night were pretty appalling. Mm. There was no excuse to not score on Saturday. Mm. It was perfect. The weather was great.
It's funny the amount of people who said, like, this may come down to a Joe Schmidt power play in advance, just because it's a seemingly intelligent and fair thing to say. And, I mean, never has a game actually just come down more to a Joe Schmidt power play.
And even Hansen said beforehand, I'm sure he's got a trick up his sleeve.
Yeah.
And it wasn't one of his most complex ones. It was just a lovely identification that New Zealand hadn't got anyone back behind the front line in that corner. So you just sweep back around. Aki's pass was very good. Stockdale's chip, which was brave considering he'd nearly given the game away by getting blocked down by Kieran Reid, like about three or four. I forgot it was that close. It was like, I watched it back this morning, it was like 3 or 4 minutes beforehand. And he gets it over this time, and his aggression and chase and power to get that try was really, 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 really impressive.
His skill with ball of feet is actually incredible as well, because somebody posted that gif the other day, I think it might have been Keane Tracy, showing the trapping of the ball by Jacob Stockdale, which I don't know, people are loath to compare soccer and the football teams. He'd probably do a better job in Cyrus Christie in midfield tonight.
You're going to get a lot of more texts, I think.
Good.
We've been prattling on about the rugby here, obviously. You might just kick off the news round, which is brought to you with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products, by just reminding people who might have just come along of the Irish team.
God love yous. The Republic of Ireland side will wear black armbands tonight and hold a minute's silence as a mark of respect for the Irish fan that lost his life in Copenhagen at the weekend. Rin Aarhus, as Joe mentions, to face Denmark in their final game of a disappointing Nations League campaign. Relegation to League C already confirmed for Martin O'Neill's side tonight, and that side shows five changes from the draw with Northern Ireland. Darren Randolph starts in goal. It's a back three of Richard Keogh, Shane Duffy and Kevin Long. Seamus Coleman and Enda Stevens provide the width either side of midfield that is comprised of Cyrus Christie and Robbie Brady, with Jeff Hendrick and Callum O'Dowda in support of Millwall Aidan O'Brien, who comes in for Callum Robinson. For Denmark, Frederik Rinne starts in goal, a back four for them, of Peter Ankersen, Mathias Jørgensen, Andreas Bjelland and Jonas Knudsen. In midfield, Lasse Schüne and Pierre-Emil Højbjerg are joined by Christian Eriksen, with Yusuf Juraj and Martin Braithwaite either side of Nikolaj Jørgensen in a front three. O'Neill's been outlining what he wants to see from his side tonight.
Play with a little bit of confidence for a start, obviously to restore that, get back to what we were not that very long ago, and get back to that resilient side, but more importantly to try and be more creative, number one. And I think that's the thing that would be very important, and naturally we want to try and do well in the game, try and, you know, I think just be more creative, and being more creative, you're hoping then to be able to create more chances. That's what we've been lacking.
It sure is. Kickoff 7:45. We have Nathan there, Dan McDonald there. They'll be chatting in just a few moments' time about that team. They're over in our house. Meanwhile, back to the rugby. So we're getting various bits on who's going to be out and for how long.
Yeah, Sean O'Brien looks likely to miss the start of Ireland's Six Nations campaign. Leinster confirming today that the back row had surgery on his broken arm and will be ruled out for between 8 and 12 weeks. Meanwhile, Robbie Henshaw will miss the Champions Cup games with Bath back-to-back as a hamstring injury will sideline the centre for between 4 and 6 weeks. Dan Levy is out of Friday's Pro 14 meeting with the Ospreys. He has a neck strain. That's the injury that kept him out of the All Blacks victory. Levy was one of a clutch of Ireland players to return to their provinces ahead of Saturday's test with the United States. Kieran Marmion is back with Connacht, while Levy, Sean Cronin, Jack McGrath, Rob Kearney, James Ryan and Jordan Larmour have all gone back to Leinster. Meanwhile, the Ireland coaching team have also confirmed that Peter O'Mahony suffered a dead leg in the win over the All Blacks, but does remain with the squad.
I was curious to see where he was, because even they showed on the TV the moment the full-time whistle went and everybody stood up in unison celebration, and O'Mahony got halfway there and then his face went,
and he went
back down to his seat, and I thought, oh God, we're going to get a horrible email about O'Mahony on Monday. So dead leg I'll take.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I mean, he was there today. He's in Carton House. He hasn't been released back to Munster. So I think they've kept the leadership core around to guide this, what will be an experienced team this week.
You were there, obviously, today.
Yeah, Christmas decorations everywhere.
Is that right?
It was really surreal.
So it was a very happy place.
Yeah, it was.
Who was out talking to the media?
Ian Henderson was up today and he spoke very well.
I was just going to say, Henderson is really intelligent, brilliant fella, very smart fella.
Yeah, no, he spoke really well. He embraced everything without, you know, getting too carried away. And he was very good. I mean, they always try and move things on a Monday, but he ended up taking about 40 questions on the All Blacks and one about USA. But he spoke really well, despite the fact there was a massive Christmas tree looming to the side. And there's a real after the Lord Mayor Show feel this week. The fact that, you know, the provinces are back this week, even that, you know, Leinster will start thinking about their midfield crisis without Robbie Henshaw. All that normality will resume soon.
Mundaneness.
And like, it won't be long before we're playing England in the Six Nations in the first round.
Yeah, jeez. So where are we going next?
Yeah, we'll go to Munster, because we actually could see a couple of players back for them this weekend. Conor Murray could make his first appearance of the season. The scrum half has returned to full training with the province, having last played in Ireland's decisive test victory over Australia on June 23rd. Murray's been sidelined since then with a bulging disc in his neck. Munster could also welcome back long-term absentee Chris Farrell from his ligament injury, and versatile back, Jaco Tate for that game in Parma. Amy Broadhurst joined Kelly Harrington in reaching the quarterfinals at the World Women's Elite Boxing Championships in New Delhi today. The Dundalk light welterweight beat Armenia's Ani Hovsepian on a unanimous decision to set up a last-eight meeting with India's own Cor Bhatt. That's tomorrow. Disappointment for the other three Irish boxers in action today. Michaela Walsh losing her featherweight last 16 bout on a split decision to Alessia Mezziano of Italy. Roscommon middleweight Aoife O'Rourke lost two reigning Commonwealth Games champion Lauren Price of Wales, while Cavan flyweight Kira Smith was beaten by Namiki Tsukimi of Japan.
Just in case you can't get to a TV and watch the match this evening, Colm has taken care of things for you.
Germany, Holland.
Three right fullbacks, three centre halves, three left wingers, one centre midfielder, zero strikers. This is the worst Irish team since 1970.
O'Brien's a striker, to be fair.
Makes me want to dig up the team from 1970, though. It's quite specific. It's a selection designed to do one thing: avoid a heavy defeat at all costs, keep Martin and Roy in their jobs. It'll be 2-0 to Denmark, with the Danes having 80%+ possession. Martin will throw Obafemi on with 5 minutes to go and will focus on that in the post-match interview. No need to watch it, says Colin.
Germany, Holland's on. Holland need a win to top that group. It's going to be good.
I went to see Millwall a couple of weeks ago for some reason, and they're playing Ipswich.
We'll let that
and
go.
It was fourth from bottom against bottom, and Aidan O'Brien was brought on with them 3-0 up. You can't even get into that team. It's a bit concerning when he's leading the line. I think they brought him on the right wing.
Callum Robinson injured?
No.
I just don't understand why he's not playing.
Because Martin O'Neill's the manager, Joe.
Yeah, no. But I know. I mean, we don't want to be glib about these things. Like, honestly, we'll talk to Gary Breen later on at full time and see what he thinks. But I think Robinson's form of late for Preston's been really good, and he's looked good in an Irish shirt. And You know, Aidan O'Brien is, fair play to him, like he's turned his career around at Millwall. To be at Millwall from where he was a few years ago is fantastic, and he's brilliant attitude, but I don't think he is going to be the future, short-term or long-term, and at least Robinson has more of a chance. I really can't understand that one. So we'll have to see what the plan is, he says.
I'd love to know someone like Sean Williams' thoughts tonight.
He was the best player on the pitch that day.
Yeah, and he was quoted this week as saying that, like, you know, conversations with Roy Keane have been key in his play being turned around and how he wants to approach his playing in centre midfield. And he's left on the bench to watch a right full back, the second choice right full back, be picked ahead of him.
No, the Christie thing is strange. Unless he suddenly blossoms in a way that we can't foresee. I mean, Martin Neil still knows football. Maybe he's seen something up close, but
he won two European Cup show.
Stop with the glibness, will you?
Can't.
Less of the glibness.
It's who I am. It's okay. My hashtag brand.
You be you. We should finish on very sad news. This came through yesterday, kind of in the midst of the pay-per-view, and everybody here was certainly very, very fond of Uisce Fogarty.
Most certainly, yeah. GAA President John Horan led the tributes to Uisce today, who died at the weekend, aged 77. The legendary Radio Kerry broadcaster had worked within the GAA as a player, coach and referee, and as a matter of trivia, was the first ever official to issue a yellow card in the game. In a statement, Horan wrote today, "His voice and general enthusiasm for Gaelic games spread far beyond his native Kerry, and his ability to communicate transcended generations, meaning he was equally well known with younger listeners as he was with his peers." As John mentioned, he will be very, very sadly missed.
An absolute gent. I can't tell you how popular he was every time he came on here. It was just, there was a Uisce loving every time he came on talking about anything. And the last time he was on, he was talking about memories of the 1955 final. There was a piece that we're going to play out later on, which a lot of people remembered about him at the Munster final, where he was just basically pointing out the various steeples and mountains, and the Gooch lives there and I live here, and the hospital behind me is where I worked for 38 years. And he was just...
he was giving you a tour of the town.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's amazing. So we'll play some of that later on. He was a gent, and everybody here was very, very sad when they saw the news. We'll take a short break. Rory, thanks so much for coming in.
Good job.
And we're over to our house next.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.